Honorable September, who's either in or on her way to Zimbabwe, part of the SADC monitoring group for the the referendum that will be taking place in Zimbabwe. Honorable Bowman and Fololo are in a meeting with the chief whip, so they'll be here anytime. And Honorable Michael will be a few minutes late, but she is on her way. Mr. Mukwena is also a bit held up, he's on his way. I think we may start then. We have two inputs by Infraco and Janelle. I think we'll be starting with Janelle. I'll request that we have the Janelle briefing and interaction with the presentation until 11 o'clock, and then thereafter we'll have Infraco from quarter past 11. Chair, as is normal practice, you will open it for us. I think we by now all know one another, so I wouldn't do a round of introduction. We have met several times, and therefore I think we should just continue. We've already missed out on a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the Portfolio Committee. It's always a pleasure to come to Parliament and to the Portfolio Committee to come and account for what we do on a daily basis. I am accompanied here by the CEO, Mr. Ilias Saluji, who is going to address the committee and give background to some of the questions that were raised last year, October, when we addressed the when we came to appear before the committee. Mr. Sontlo, who is our CFO, will give the details on the financial questions that were raised. Ms. Natasha Davis is standing in for Mr. Ngidi, who's not well at all, and she will be on the delving into the HR questions that were raised. I think we're ready to present to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, media. The interaction that we are going to have today is basically a follow-up of the questions that emanated from the last interaction that we had in October of last year. There were a number of issues that were raised by the committee with regard to developments within TNL and some of the issues that were impacting on the organization. We had responded, well, and specifically related to, for example, the recapitalization, the funding model, and the sustainability of TNL. Of course, some of the business opportunities and the programs that we are busy with at the moment, at that point and right now, and what effect or impact it has on the business going forward. There was a lot of concern also and a lot of discussion around some of the HR issues with particular reference to TNL's transformation plan and interventions, and hopefully we will address some of those issues today. One of the key issues that I think also emanated from that that interaction was how do we define and contextualize the strategic nature of TNL? And if we agree that there is a consensus that TNL is a strategic national asset, how then do we create the context within which we can sustain this business going forward? So in November, we had responded officially in writing to the committee with respect to many of the HR issues and transformation matters, but we will again reiterate some of those and reconfirm the commitment that TNL has to transformation and also to give you some view as to what the current status is with our transformation process. So what we'll do, I will address the issue of the recapitalization and the sustainable funding model, because I think that has been of concern to the committee, given the history of where Tenel is coming from. And hopefully we will give you some idea as to what plans are there, what are the strategic issues that are driving the business at the moment in order to make it sustainable. Also to give you some idea as to what are the key local opportunities that we are busy with at the moment, and of course the level of support that is required, and not only from the committee but from government as well, in order for those opportunities to materialize, because if they do, they have a significant impact on the financial performance of Tenel. And then Natasha will address some of the issues around HR and transformation, as I've indicated earlier on. With regard to the recap and the funding model, you are aware that the finance minister announced that we will be getting a 700 million rand recap as requested through GPE, okay, our principal shareholder. We have received up to now 400 million from the shareholder in December of 2012, and we're expecting the balance of 300 to flow by the end of March 2013. And that is essentially where we are at the moment, and it has made a significant difference in terms of assisting Tenel at this particular point in time. I think with the level of interventions, the new strategic plan, the business opportunities that we are following at the moment, we are quite confident that hopefully this will not be repeated in the near future again. You are also aware of the fact that Tenel has a high level of debt because of the losses that we have incurred historically over the last few years. And that we have asked for and received a guarantee from government to the amount of 1.8 billion, which replaced the historical 12 and 18 month guarantees that we kept on renewing. It just meant that the bureaucratic and administrative process to get those guarantees in place every few months impacted very negatively on our ability to sustain the cash flow within the business. So at least we've had the support of government and Treasury specifically, where we've restructured that debt of 1.8 into 3 and 5 year bonds, okay, which will address the issue of liquidity and funding within the organization. And that's gone a long way to assisting us, particularly when it comes to things like ramping up our production facilities and our personnel when we are receiving significant contracts. The overall strategic issue of the sustainability of Tenel is, of course, something that we have been engaging with the DPE, with Treasury as well. And there's been a number of very positive, constructive discussions on how do we collectively address this, a sustainable funding model for Tenel. And those discussions are at quite an advanced stage. And this has to do with support with financial institutions, looking at how can we further address the issue of the guarantees and address reducing the debt. But I think there is common consensus again that the way to sustainability and to create a better funding mechanism for Tenel is predominantly based on the fact that we need to acquire new business and revenue streams. So that is a fundamental aspect of our new strategy going forward. As I've indicated at the last interactions with the committee as well, that the business outlook, notwithstanding the difficult nature of the market, is looking very positive at the moment. And we are hoping that that positive outlook that we have described, not only described, but that we have actually achieved in certain instances, will be the key to the future sustainability of Tenel. If you look at the corporate plan which you have seen, for the next 5 years, based on that order pipeline and the potential business, both from an internal and external revenue perspective, will indicate that Tenel will be financially improving significantly over the next 5 years, okay? And that sustainability hopefully will be maintained going forward. With regards to some of the major local opportunities, you are aware again of the fact that even when we met last year, and this has been in process for the last three years, we have been making significant efforts to conclude a vehicle program for the South African National Defense Force through the Department of Defense, which is called the Hoofaster project. Okay. That is essentially the new infantry combat vehicle requirement of the National Defense Force. Okay. We have made significant progress in terms of addressing this particular matter with the local customer and client. And we are quite confident that that this program will go ahead. And if it does go ahead, it will have a significant impact on a number of levels. Firstly, it will rejuvenate the vehicle technology and combat capability, not only of the Defense Force, but of Denel itself. So it puts us in the forefront internationally of vehicle technology when it comes to armor. Okay. Secondly, it's going to have a significant impact on the number of jobs that will potentially be created if we do get this contract. And thirdly, it will be significant in terms of the supply chain of industry in general, because that program will involve a significant number of local companies in terms of supplying equipment, parts, and vehicle manufacturing to this program. So from a cardinal program perspective, this is an essential program going forward. It will have a duration of about 10 years and will have a significant economic impact on the business. So we are quite positive that this will happen, and when it does happen, at least on the vehicle capability side, on the landward side, we will have sustained the business going forward for a significant period. You may have read in the press as well that another significant program which we were engaging, the ground-based air defense system for the National Defense Force, was delivered. Phase one was delivered to the client, and it had gone through all the trials, all the evaluations, and it was handed over successfully in March 2012. The second phase of the ground-based air defense system, GBS-2, is of course again a significant program for us because it also allows Denel the ability to demonstrate the systems integration capability we have. There are not many companies, not locally or internationally, that operate at that system level 5, which you take a number of different products, technologies, and components and integrate them into a complete system. And we have proved in the GBAS program that Denel is capable of doing that, and we are very proud of that. One of the things that defines Denel from a technology perspective and from a strategic perspective in terms of local capabilities is the fact that we have a very significant missile technology capability. You are aware of the fact that we are in a strategic partnering agreement with the Brazilian Armed Forces through the Department of Defense on a new generation missile, the ADATA program, and that is going extremely well at the moment. It's on track and the funding has been made available, and we are looking forward to actually collaborating even more significantly with our Brazilian counterparts for the production phase of that particular relationship. What that essentially means is that we will have gone a long way towards securing the missile capability of the company. There are many other programs which are coming online with regard to other vehicle requirements, other air platform requirements. We have done significantly well in the aerostructures environment as well. If you look at where the aerostructures business was with a few years ago and where it is today, there's been a fundamental change and a radical step forward in terms of how we have restructured that business in a more positive way as well. One of the things that I've indicated earlier on in terms of the sustainability of Denel has been the fact that we have looked at the external revenue sources that we need to secure in order to make this business sustainable. You are aware as well that we have signed one of the biggest, or the biggest export order with the Malaysians for turret technology and capabilities on their new infantry combat vehicle program, and that program is going extremely well, and it shows that, you know, we are capable of performing at the highest level internationally as well. We have also secured some significant new business within the Middle East, particularly in the UAE. We have now, through our African strategy, which has been a huge emphasis on our part, secured some very good business on the African continent as well, in for example, places like Angola. Our demining activities with the United Nations has increased significantly as well, thereby contributing to peace and security within the continent. And we are quite confident that in the next 12 to 18 months there will be significantly more activity that will be going on within the African environment, particularly through, for example, the African Union, the new Southern African Brigade that is being formed to take part in peace support and peacekeeping operations. And we are hoping that we will be able to play a role in that space as well. There is the BRICS summit that is coming up in the next few weeks. We will be making a significant announcement there in terms of cooperation with our Russian counterparts on helicopter maintenance and repair. So essentially what I'm saying is that the business prospects and the revenue stream that we talked about last year is steadily and incrementally improving as time has gone on. And we are quite confident that this financial year, which will be ending at the end of March and of course at our annual general meeting in June or July, that we will also have a more positive outlook about the business going forward, unlike what has happened in the previous years. So if I just have to maybe summarize in terms of the issues as emanated from that discussion that we had in last year and the questions that the committee had raised, a lot of that was related to the transformation and HR issues that Natasha is going to be addressing. I just thought I'd give you a status update on where we are at the moment. I'm and the executive team and the board of Denel, we are confident that we have arrived at the point where the interventions that we have made over the last 12 months have put us on a footing which will allow us to address those issues that were concerning government, were concerning the committee with regard to its sustainability, its ability to retain jobs, and a whole range of other concerns that we had. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to now hand over to Natasha to start addressing some of the HR issues with regard to the questions that you had raised in your formal request to us.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. As mentioned, I'm going to be speaking to you about the HR issues and with specific reference to retention, employment equity, and youth development. During the previous meeting, the committee was concerned about the NAL's attrition rate, which was at 6.7%. That is well within our industry norm, and we have a target range of between 5 and 7. What we also do is when employees leave the NAL, we conduct an exit interview to determine their reason for leaving. And most of the respondents indicate that economic reasons, or they're able to find better jobs outside, better paying jobs for their departure. Although the NAL makes sure that we do a regular market salary reviews to see whether we're paying in line with that. What we've also noticed is that with generational theory, which are Generation Y, which are people born around about the 1980s and later, they change jobs frequently. So that does have an impact on retention. What we've also seen is a recent study conducted by Magnet Communications have actually interviewed employees that worked at Denel previously, and they have said to us that they are prepared to return to Denel. So that's a positive for us. Currently, our attrition figures are slightly higher this year, and that is mainly due to the retrenchments that we've had at the group, because you find that people become anxious when you notify them that we will be going through restructuring. So at the moment, it's sitting on 8.4%. But I would like to emphasize that retention is one of our key management focus areas, and we're really trying to everything so that we do retain our top talent. With regards to employment equity, Denel underwent a DG Director General review in 2011 on employment equity, where we had to supply a five-year employment equity plan, which we have done. And what we've also done, in addition to the plan, was appointment of deputy CEOs at each of the Denel divisions. These are transformation candidates, and all appointments are based on a 70-30 principle, 70% being ACIs. Obviously, our target is for this year, and we will incrementally increase that so that we ensure that we have a diverse workforce. Specific focus, management focus is on appointing women and people with disabilities. And we also have various programs within the organization to ensure that we fast-track ACI. And just the point of Denali is committed to creating a diverse workforce. With regards to youth development, we've got a two-pronged approach where we create awareness on the one side and we have youth development programs on the other side. And with the awareness, what we do is we exhibit at various expos in different provinces. As you can see, we're involved in Gauteng, KZN, Northwest, PE, Western Cape, and we will be expanding to other provinces. And this is where we exhibit and showcase the products and services that Denali is involved in. In June this year, we'll be hosting 100 learners from the Free State in collaboration with CPE to showcase, and they will be at Denali for 2 days where we will showcase all our services and products to them. Other initiatives that we have is, for example, we participate in Take a Girl Child to Work because our workforce and the industry is male-dominated, so we're trying to encourage young women to also get involved in our industry. During the AAD, we hosted a stand at the defense show when we had a huge take-up in terms of number of learners. The other aspect that Denali is involved in, we're involved with women in engineering, where we have young female engineers at Denali that encourage young engineering students to take up careers in engineering. We also sponsor learners through the Armschool Ledger Fund, where we assist learners in presenting academic papers abroad. At the moment, we're also involved in a collaboration with the Northwest University, where we are sponsoring learners to attain their master's degrees in a research project. Denali also sponsors the Technology Olympiad, and that also brings awareness about the industry, to young people. TechnoGirl is also a program that we're involved in collaboration with the Gauteng Department of Education, where we host female learners at some of the Denali entities, and that is a job shadowing program where these learners are being shown the different types of products and services that we're involved in so that they later take up careers within the technology space. We also collaborate with various tertiary institutions to ensure that we're able to attract our future employees from them. One of our divisions, Denali Dynamics, was rated number 3 by the South African Graduate Recruiters Association, which is really significant for Denali because this shows that engineering students are very keen on working for Denali. Magnet Communications conducts surveys amongst university students, and they have also indicated that they're very eager to work with Denali, and we're currently embarking on that process to improve our attractiveness as a group. We also collaborate with various FET colleges trying to assist learners to obtain their end qualifications. With regards to youth development, we have various youth development initiatives, and we start out at a school's outreach program, which then provides a pipeline of learners to go into our bursary programs or our apprenticeship programs. The school's outreach program is based on a Saturday school program, and at the moment, we in Gauteng and the Northwest only, and in the new financial year, we plan on expanding to Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Free State. And in Gauteng, our own employees, actually engineers, volunteer and teach these students math and science at the high school level, without any remuneration. In the Northwest, it's slightly different, where we get learners from various schools, and we back them to a central place and assist them with math and science. Extra classes on a weekend, and we've seen excellent results. Denali also donated over 3,000 math textbooks to learners, which is really something that has sparked great interest, and we plan on rolling that out further. One of Denali's flagship programs is the Denali Technical Academy, where we offer artisanship for young people. We currently have 12 trades that we train learners in. 6 are aviation related and 6 are generic trades, and Denali trains over 300 learners per annum via the academy. So what happens is some of the learners are absorbed to do an apprenticeship that comes from the school's outreach, and others are offered bursaries within the NAL. At the moment, we've got over 80 university bursaries that we are offering. Then with regards to vacation and internship work, as you know, to become qualified as an engineer, you need to do vacation work. We now offer that facility to these learners. And one of our other flagship programs is at Danel Dynamics. They have a program where they take 20 of the graduates and they fast-track them so that they work ready, because technical skills are both up over a long period of time. So what happens is these 20 learners are then for a year get extensive training courses and also work on a particular project so that they are ready to participate and be productive when they're actually employed in their relevant departments. And we've seen excellent results with that as well. We have some of the other divisions also offer internships in marketing, HR, and finance. And in terms of aviation, Danel Aerostructures and Aviation has over 80 apprentices where we provide on-the-job training for them to assist them with their qualification, because they're at the academy for the first year of their training, then they do 18 months to 2 years of on-the-job training. They go back to the academy where they get trade test preparation and revision for about 6 weeks, and then they go and do their trade certificate. So just in conclusion, Danel is committed to transformation, including employment equity. Specific management focus will be on retention of young black employees, specifically in technical fields. Appointment of women and people with disabilities remains a key priority for us, and skills development will certainly continue into the future. We are also expanding our school's outreach to include other provinces, and including Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Free State in the new financial year. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think that's from our side. That's,
I will now invite members to interact with this presentation. I just wanted to find out on your, you said that this Malaysian contract and your involvement on the continent, the UN work that you're doing. Is it possible for us just to get an idea how long these contracts are, especially where you have contracts? Whether these are short-term or long-term. The Move Easter, you said if we do get the contract, there's a possibility that you may not get this. is there anything that you think we can do? Yeah, I think so. I just wanted to, Honorable Coronel, any other hands? Honorable Sonda?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, and it's, thank you for adhering to the request to come back after 5 months on the issues that we followed up. Want to follow up on the first one on the 700 million recapitalization. After your presentation, it was here in Mark's building, in that upper room, fifth floor. Some members of the committee, no names, no battle, discussed it informally with both the Minister of the National Treasury and the Deputy Minister. Whether that assisted to bring it under the magnifying glass, we don't know. But we're very happy that you've received the 400 million, and within 18 days you will receive another 300 million. So we, as a committee, I think, must congratulate you. It was a tough question 5 months ago,
because you didn't have anything. And we 18 days away from having received your full 400 million, 700 million. The first question is, however, when you were here 5 months ago, you said you applied, and I have two figures, you just correct me, which is a correct one. You applied for 3.5 billion or 2.7 billion. It's one of the two. I noted that both. So, but there's a gap. You didn't receive the full what you applied for. And how is that going to affect you? That's my first question. But the second question is about restructuring. You mentioned that the aerostructure sector, you restructured the business successfully. When I looked at the budget of the Minister of Finance, he had a very interesting paragraph in the business budget review on page 78, where he said over time, and he talks about five state-owned companies, SAA, South African Express Airways, Danel, SABC, and Post Office, those five. So you, one of those five. Over time, the equity of entities that persistently lose money is gradually eroded, which eventually requires that they be recapitalized. And then the minister goes on to say, these entities must develop sustainable long-term strategies, which you are busy with now at the moment, which may include some form of restructuring. Now, aerostructures is already one form of restructuring, where you really cut your losses and restructure it, and you're really busy turning it around. If not opportune for you to answer this question, but do we look at a further restructuring of Danel? I don't want to go into your discussions, but just give us a feel and a sense whether you will consider eventually looking into the crystal ball or looking at your long-term strategy and funding model that you're discussing, whether you consider restructuring. That's the first question. Or the second question. And my last question is the project Hoefyster. When you were here 5 months ago, you said you're hoping for the production phase. And the timing will be sooner than later. It's now 5 months later. What is your view on this? Where is this delay? Is it on the DPE side, the Danel side? Is it on DPE side, or is it on the DOD side? Or be more specific, on the executive side. Is it on the Minister of Defence that needs to sign it and say, listen, I approve. This is my signature. I just need a feel, because this is a very important project for you, for yourselves. And it's now 5 months later, there's nothing on the horizon that we see to say anything has changed since 31st of October 2012. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would want also to thank the presentation. It's short, sweet, and straight to the point. But so just a few questions. Mr. Saluji, you were saying South Africa is known, or is being noticed through Danel's technological capability. That's a good plus. But are we having an impact here at home? I'm saying this, citing or in fact inquiring the relations between Danel and SANDF, whether what assists the continent and the global defense communities is also assisting here at home. This question is clumsy, but I'm just trying to check whether we are being noticed here at home, that at least we are technologically advanced as Dineo. Well, you've answered me in terms of the continent on your demining in Angola and other parts of the continent. Now, coming back to HR issues, I understand, Natasha, that young people would want to explore. But what is it that we are doing to keep them, in fact, to discipline them, not to explore, I would say, carelessly? Because we train these youngsters, all they are doing is just to rotate the industries without any impact at all. Now, I'm looking at whether when you give people training or when you give people bursaries, are there any terms attached to those bursaries?
Thank you, Chair. Apology for me being late. When Honourable Santos said Natasha, I immediately looked up. My name's also Natasha. Chair, forgive me if this has perhaps been dealt with, but I was specifically hoping to get a little bit of feedback dealing with the Dineo Aviation side of things and the retrenchment of the 528 highly qualified airline maintenance staff. And I'll tell you why. There seemed to have been quite a bit of controversy, whether correct or not, around the retrenchment. I think that a lot of the unions had their own opinions about it and were very vocal in the media about it. And I think there's a lot of misconception regarding where you are at the moment in terms of negotiating with FEDUSA, with Solidaritet, and with the Air Force itself. I believe that there were talks at some time that the Air Force was going to absorb these 528 people into their own structure to do the maintenance from them. We also believe that the Air Force actually said that the reason they didn't require the service anymore was because it was coming at too high a cost. And I just want to know what's the true story? Was it too expensive? Was there no way perhaps a deal could have been structured with the Air Force to save these jobs by somehow lowering cost to company? But I'd really like to know where it stands at present, because I regularly get emails saying we need your help. And, I would like to be able to give an answer back. Secondly, I must say I'm very impressed with the work that you do specifically with school children. One of your Dineo offices, the Centurion office, falls within my constituency itself, and I was most pleased the other day when I passed and there were two school buses with children who were interested in becoming engineers and interested in getting involved in that kind of field being taken around on a tour group from the school. I think that's a very positive step forward, because we need to train more artisans in our country. I myself was a recipient of a Dineo leadership program when I was in matric. At your Dineo offices in Erasmus Cliff in Pretoria, and I know personally that it was very, very beneficial. So I'd just like to say well done on doing this, and please continue to encourage young South Africans to become artisans.
Yeah, thanks. I just want to, Honourable Michael, why do you follow me wherever I go? You make sure that you. I was in council, you came to council. I went to parliament, and you came to parliament. My constituency is in Centurion, now you're in Centurion.
Chairperson, the simple answer for that is your magnetic personality.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, as I've indicated with the Hoefeester production order, there has been extremely positive discussions going on, and I think there's a general understanding that, or a common understanding that this is a very critical capability that we need to maintain. It is at a very delicate stage. I can say that it is a very good progress that we are making, and hopefully we will hear something within the next week or two. Okay, so it's looking very positive at the moment. And there's been very constructive discussions around the project. So we are hoping that the formal announcement will be made soon.
The question was, where is it? On whose desk is it? Is it on your desk or the DOD desk?
Mr. Chair, I think, look, it's gone through a number of processes at the moment, and I believe that it is awaiting a final decision now. So it's gone through the entire bureaucratic process, and we are quite confident that it will happen soon now. So with regard to some of these other projects, like the ones that we have mentioned for the UN and in Malaysia, the Malaysia contract typically, because it's a production order for turrets on a significant number of vehicles, those are long-term contracts which sustain the business, and in fact those are the kind of projects that we would really want more of, because those are 3 to 5 year programs, and that's good business going forward. You know, it's not a one-off thing that is going to happen over 6 months and then it's gone. Typically with the UN as well, because once we do supply the vehicles for the demining activities, we support them, we maintain them, and we provide the personnel. So those are also good long-term contracts, you know, and it creates a lot of sustainable employment going forward as well. And that's the kind of the ones that we are focusing on winning more of. With regard to the recap and what was the original amount, I think the original amount, maybe, Philly, if you want to just say something.
The recap amount that you applied for was 2.7 billion. You mentioned two numbers, and the correct number was 2.7. And what has happened within the 2.7, it was broken down into 700 million for the denial error structures, and the other amount was for to enable the group to repay its debt. So what has been honored is the part relating to the error structures business. And then I think there was one question that you have asked to say, how is this going to affect us? That is integrally linked to the discussion we are having with National Treasury, where we sit with the balance sheet, we are evaluating, and we are asking each other in terms of methodologies that could be used to take the business forward. So, but we are very positive about those discussions.
Thank you, Figile. With regard to the issue of any further restructuring at Denel, as I've indicated before, we went through a significant restructuring process last year. From a number of aspects or perspectives, the one was to restructure the governance model of Denel, okay? And we've successfully accomplished that. And by governance model, we mean to have a much more integrated one Denel concept, okay? Because there was a lot of dispersion and a lot of decentralization of activities that took place in Denel over the last few years. We have now brought it back up into some kind of coherent, integrated system, where there's more accountability, more responsibility, and a better understanding of what the collective must do for the business. So we have restructured fundamentally in terms of the organizational structure. Whereas in the past there were, I think, 7 different boards, we have now one Denel board. Okay? And we've also consolidated some of the businesses into one entity. There was also a reduction with regard to reducing the overhead costs in terms of the number of people that we had employed. And we had engaged in a voluntary severance package process and a retrenchment process, because the overhead cost was just not, it was just too high to sustain the business. We are quite confident as the executive team now that we have arrived at the point where we are at our optimum level. So if you look at Danel Aero Structures as a typical example, they have now restructured and restructured and restructured to the point at which if we do any further restructuring, the critical mass that is required to win some of the business will not be there anymore. So we believe we've reached an optimum phase in terms of the restructuring process. Okay. In fact, what we are now hoping for is that as the new contracts come in, we may have, even have, not may, we are quite confident that we're going to employ more people. Okay. So, I mean, so we have reached, I think, that point where we've now maintained the critical mass and we are now looking forward to further growth going forward. I think Figueres has answered the issue of the funding mechanism, so those discussions are at an advanced stage, and I think there's, it's important, and I would probably maybe just want to link it to this issue of the strategic nature of Danel. You know, if we say that, and the draft defense review very specifically addresses the issue of Danel, and it says that Danel should be the custodian of strategic capabilities for the National Defense Force, okay, in the country. If we recognize that that is the case, that it should be the custodian of these strategic defense industrial capabilities, okay, then there has to be a level of understanding and a formalized agreement between the different parties such as DOD, Danel, Arms Corps, which regularizes and formalizes this strategic relationship that exists. Okay, because then we can have planning that is better, it is long-term, and it is sustainable. Okay. So we are in the process of trying to do that. And I must say that there has been extremely positive responses from all the key stakeholders and players recognizing the strategic nature of Danel. And we're hoping that there will be some progress in the next month or two towards consolidating that view. In terms of the technology which is recognized internationally, and the question was, is it recognized locally? Very much so. I think from a Department of Defense and from a Defense Force perspective, I think there's a clear understanding and view that Danel does have very significant capabilities. But we are well aware of the fact that there are huge budgetary pressures on the Defense Force. Okay? I mean, that's reality, and we have to accept that, that there will be prioritization of national spending. And we have to live within that. So what we are trying to do is to maintain those capabilities in order to sustain those capabilities locally, but also making sure that we are generating enough revenue from an external environment so that we can sustain those capabilities for the local environment. What are we doing to retain young people without disciplining them? I'm not so sure, but Natasha, maybe you can.
We certainly have work-back obligations. So when we sponsor buses, they have a work-back period. And what we also do is that previously for an engineer to grow professionally took a very long time. So we've tried to shorten those periods of moving from one competency level to the next. So instead of, for example, if taking 3 years, it could take a year or 18 months to progress them to the next level of technical competence. We certainly also try and involve them in exciting projects. And there's various other initiatives that we do. For example, we've got a young leaders forum where we try and get all the young people under the age of 35 together and just for them to have fun, because most of our workforce is predominantly older. So they sometimes feel a bit, not marginalized, but obviously they're young, they've got new ideas, they've got new ways of working, and you find, people that have been doing the work for a long time. So we try and create that space for them to get together and interact. Beg your pardon? Yes, for sure. So we try and find a space for young people to interact and get to know one another, and that also, builds loyalty and retains people. But you don't discipline them.
If I may just add, in January we had a Young Achievers Award ceremony, and I wish some of the committee members could have been there, because if there was a really proud moment, not only for Danel but for South Africa, outside of the bursary program where we're taking in at least 80 to 100 people, we take 20 of those young engineers every year into an internship program. We give them a one-year program where they will be specifically working on certain technology projects, and then they are placed into work streams within the organization. But last year, for example, this class of 2012, 20 young engineers, completely representative and transformed, okay, were given the responsibility of technically producing a SAT cube, a satellite cube. So that satellite is the size of a shoebox, okay? And they're going to launch it this year, okay? Together with NASA and whatever else. Now, maybe we have been remiss because we've not publicized these things enough, okay? But, I mean, that is phenomenal. If you take 20 young students, they're now going to launch their own satellite, which is the size of a shoebox. I mean, that's quite remarkable, you know? So, but we will definitely make a point to invite the committee at some of the other functions that we are hosting, because it's really, and it's not an understatement to say that, you know, Denali is one of the few companies in this country that has that level of human capital invested in it, really. And we need to be proud of that. I think the last question related to Denel Aviation and the AMG contract. I think it is a well-known fact that this contract was up for renewal some time back. A decision at that point was taken to not renew the contract for a number of reasons. Amongst others was that the Auditor General found that there was a problem in terms of how it was originally contracted with Denel. We negotiated throughout the whole of last year with the Air Force to at least retain some capability and do it in a way in which will not have a significant impact on the workforce. The fact is that towards the end of last year, the decision to not renew the contract was then re-invoked, notwithstanding the discussions that we had. I think all the parties got around the table, and I must say there was a lot of support from government, from many other quarters, from the Department of Defense as well, with a view towards seeing how best we can create a situation which will not have such a negative impact on the retrenchments that were planned. The fact of the matter is that given the budget of the Air Force, they could not sustain that level of funding. So it wasn't a question of being too expensive. It was a question of them not having enough funds to match the workflow that was required for that number of people. What we have now agreed to is that we accept a number of things. The one is that there had to be a certain level of retrenchment. Okay. But that we should do it in a responsible way so that we do not lose any of those strategic maintenance capabilities. So we are engaged in the process at the moment with the Air Force, which will identify the number of critical and essential skills that they require to maintain that capability. Those individuals who will not be part of that critical and essential group, okay, will obviously be impacted upon. The other key issue that emerged from the discussions was that the Air Force wanted to maintain that maintenance and repair capability embedded within its own organization, okay. So we will negotiate with them how do we migrate, again, in a responsible way, the capability from where we are today into the Air Force over a certain period. The bottom line is that there will be a number of people who will be retrenched. There will be a certain key capability that will be retained, so it will not have a negative impact on the capabilities of the Defense Force and the Air Force specifically. But that we have managed to salvage at least, again, I say in a responsible way, some of the jobs and some of the capability within that contract. And at the moment, as we speak right now, we are still in negotiations with the Air Force and the Department of Defense and together with DPE about how to create a better situation within this environment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think those were all the questions. I don't know if there's anything else.
Unless one of your colleagues wants to add something, Mr. Chair. Just a fact, before, let me just check with the members first, because after you have spoken, and then we're not going to have any other questions. Honorable Michael. Welcome, Honorable Bowman. Oh, welcome, Honorable Mukwena.
Thank you, sir.
You are most welcome.
I believe you will receive my apology.
No, we did. Thank you so much.
And you too.
I'm in the way, Chief.
Oh, Honorable Hololo, we did give your apology.
Okay.
So it's Honorable Michael, Honorable Bowman, Honorable Sponto, and then Honorable Koronov. In that order.
Thank you, Chief. When you come before us, it's a fantastic opportunity for us to dispel myths and rumors that we hear as well, because you can imagine many things get said to us and questions get asked. I'd like to ask you something regarding arms corps. Now, there was a general email that was sent around to a few politicians informing us that arms corps is putting a great deal of pressure on Denel to rid themselves of foreign investment, and that the pressure was pretty heavy. Is there any truth to this rumor? Is there anything that our committee needs to be concerned about? Is there anything that you are concerned about in this regard? Thanks, Chair.
I wanted just to emphasize on the point that I made about skills developed and lost. If you would listen to all the SOCs, they would cry foul to poaching. They develop people, and those people get easily poached by other SOCs. And sometimes you find it uncomfortable when Denel would lose engineers to say, for instance, sorry, to Eskom. Yes. There should be something that is being done, because you can't get equipped by Eskom and leave Eskom within no time because Denel is offering a better package, you know. I think that interaction between SOCs in order to stabilize the scarce and critical skills it needs to be entered into. Thank you very much, Sir President.
With your permission, can I give you some homework? In the budget speech, the minister announced that the government will review the developmental activities of state-owned companies. And he said where such activities are mandated, they will be funded by one of three options. One is explicit fiscal allocations. Number two, transparent cross-subsidies from other users. Or three, by government accepting a lower return on equity. Can you just explore this and find out whether you can tell us whether you have mandated development activities, I assume you have, and if it's the case, that you just follow up with Treasury and see which of these funding activity options may be applicable to you.
The comment we're making about the sustainable funding model discussion and the fact that it is positive is because the discussion is in fact incorporating all of those issues. We are asking the question, in this particular area of business, what is the level of revenue, what is the level of profitability, why are you keeping it, is it because it's sustainable or is it critical or strategic to the country? So it's incorporating all of those points. It's part of the discussion.
I think maybe the question was a bit more specific with regard to those other developmental activities that we're involved with. Are there specific funding mechanisms to address that? And that's homework that we will do. What we are doing, we do have developmental goals and objectives that set by our shareholder, which is mandated. So that's what we are now in the process of exploring. And that's the homework that we'll do for you.
I think those are the
I was going to make some closing remarks, but I'll try to deal with the AMSCO issue because it is a shareholder matter dealt with by the board. AMSCO was and I think still is concerned with foreign control of what it regards as strategic state entities. And they therefore were keen to see where financially and economically feasible to see control in those entities where majority shareholding is held by foreign companies revert back to South African control. But one's got to explain that at the time that these equity transactions were entered into, the NEL was in a dismal state. Those foreign partners, strategic partners, have helped bring them, those entities, those JVs that we have, are very profitable, and are we learning a lot from best practice that in the manner in which they conduct their business. So where possible, we'll try and claw back, but we also understand that, you know, to keep those entities interested in keeping them investing in South Africa and in the JV, they have to maintain sizable interest. The principle of South African control of what is regarded as strategic enterprises is something that the board is sensitive to, and we want to achieve that if possible, but it's not always possible. We've benefited from those JVs, and we have, I don't think there's any regret by the board, and I think by management, in entering into those joint ventures.
Just for clarity, I'm hearing that you will not revisit your strategic partnerships that you've entered into when you presented to us your different business models, business units. I mean, this rumor is not going to affect that.
We're not going to review it. Not at the moment. What we do want to say that these are viable entities. They've been brought back into health. They're in a healthy state of operation. It's a question of don't fix it if it's not broken. We are ever sensitive to AMSCO's sentiment, which I think we share, that control should always best in South Africa where possible. But we have a situation like we have in one of our JVs where we repair and refurbish aircraft engines. Of the 170 or so that get repaired and refurbished every year, 150 the partner brings in from outside of South Africa. Now, if they insist on a majority shareholding and decide they want to exit, if they have to reduce their shareholding to a minority, then that business is going to go to the wall. It's going to go under. So it is not always possible to insist on majority shareholding in those JVs. I don't know if I've answered your question, Mr. Gorlov.
You may continue.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to support the comments that have been made by the chairperson of DNEL. We have certainly seen the benefits of the strategic equity partnerships that DNEL entered into with specific overseas OEMs We have seen the benefits of those OEMs opening access to certain markets. And certainly on our side, we are engaging with both AMSCO and the DoD to ensure that we continue to support DINEL, especially now DINEL that it has structured to the point where we have confidence with the capabilities that have been maintained within DINEL. We have seen with the orders that DINEL has been able to land that they have retained world-class capabilities. And it's critical for us as a country, especially if we're saying that the capabilities that are within DINEL are strategic, that we support DINEL and we support DINEL in terms of orders, because that's what gives confidence to overseas markets that indeed the products that are being offered are of our world class if the home customer is also ordering those that particular equipment. So that's all I wanted to say, Chair. Thank you.
Before I close, and I'll invite the Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we appreciate the questions that were posed to us. I think we've been able, and I hope that we've tried to answer as truthfully as we can and as clearly as we can. I just want to say, give a general picture of where DINEL is at today. And I would say that, but for the fact that the Minister of Finance has his hands on the press release, I would say, if you could please take DINEL off the list, because I think we're well on our way to trading out of the financial position that we're at. Our order pipeline is at unprecedented levels. There's general excitement within the group. I think we pointed out when one of the CEOs said, are you aware that the Malaysian contract is the biggest single export contract this country has ever had? I'm happy to announce that there's one or two others in the pipeline that might even be bigger than Malaysia. So the DINEL has, and we're proud, I think as a board, we're very proud of the way in which management has gone about managing the enterprise. We are well on our way to being, DINEL will be a sustainable enterprise requiring very little by way of government subsidy. Mm-hmm. If you look at our last 3 years, as much as 80%, in fact, 80% of the losses came out of aerostructures, and that is why it was necessary that aerostructures as an entity be isolated and addressed, and we've left it. Aerostructures late last year, signed a contract with Honda Jet, an American company, to subcontract to Honda Jet, and that was a vote of confidence. That is over and above the vote of confidence that we've received from Airbus. So I think in another 3 years, in fact, the losses that we're budgeted for would be much less. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel in as far as aerostructures is concerned, and if we get aerostructures right, then DINEL will show a positive operating profit going forward, and I think with time we'll be able to wipe off the debt that we have. There's general excitement about what we need, and I must say this for those that we have been determined. We appreciate the support, the questions you raised, the pleasure you put, and we got the $700 million. We appreciate the support from the committee. Now, in my experience, we've had nothing but support. Questions that were have been asked were never really witch hunting. They're always there to give clarity, and we thank the committee and would welcome another opportunity to come and address the committee in the future, because I think we have a going forward. Thanks.
Those remarks require an applause, Chairperson.
And that is how small this is.
I must just say, you will, as long as we meet our mandate, we always have the support of this committee. We strive to meet your mandate. And I think, Mr. Saluji, you're really doing yourself a disservice or shortchanging yourself. Because as Honorable Michael said, that you know, there are all the negative stories around Tinel. And you can't, when you have this award ceremony, not invite members, because this is a very important thing that, you know, we would like to brag about. And now if you are so, you know, energetic in exposing the flaws in Tinel, and you keep the good things undercover, it's not healthy, you know, because that's what we want to hear from Tinel. We support Tinel because we know that Tinel has the ability and actually the capacity to assist in the industrialization of our country, in skills development and so on. And so let's not hide these good stories. You know, I know only people who are very confident won't go around bragging about themselves, but, you know, let's do that. I really think we would like to hear more about this satellite, you know, that's possible. But I think it would be important for the department to try and engage more vigorously with DOD on this matter to try and make it understand that this JV that they are so allergic to may not really be that bad. I think it was one of the celebrations that you had there.
In front of you.
Yes, Trevor Mecca. You know, I heard how good, and I actually saw that, that it seems it does really help now to have this cooperation with this people. So maybe the department just needs to up their engagement with DOD so that we can find you know, some common ground. But we can't have this Tinel doing all this good work internationally, and we are so low when it comes to our own territory. So I think we must try to engage more vigorously with them. Yeah. But I can only wish you well and keep up the good work there. Get Tinel where it's supposed to be. Like I said, I think we have the potential, we have the capability. Thank you so much.
One observation, Mr. Chairman, is that next week there will be BRICS. South Africa has always been said to be out of its league within the BRICS bloc. I do want to say that when it comes to defense and the NEM, we are in the same league as the other members of BRICS.
Anyway, on that good note, this brings us to the end of this meeting with the chair. We will then have the next one. We'll have a 5-10 minute break. We have tea, and then we'll go into the intro. No, this one. This part of the meeting. Thank you, Honorable Son. But I repeat, this part of the meeting.
Who's there? This one from the country.
This one.
I think
the mother is not confident that.
I'm going to go to the house.